Hey guys, welcome to the Titanium Vault. I'm your host, RJ Bates III, and today I'm sitting down with one of my very few friends that's an attorney, Mr. Al Nicoletti. What's going on, Al?
RJ, what's up, man?
Not much. I give you a hard time. Listen, my brother-in-law is an attorney, Al's an attorney, and outside of that, I don't think I have any other friends that are attorneys, okay? Yet I have. Al, did you see my short that I did the other day about how I hate attorneys?
Yeah, I saw it and I commented. I laughed at it just because, like, I understand. Hey, RJ, I get it. Like, some lawyers out there just make deals just so much more difficult than they need to be. And I even see that on my end. Like, we're doing deals where there's another lawyer. I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
Yep. Well, listen, where that came from, I'll break it down for you. So I create a bunch of shorts and reels. You know, you do it as well. And sometimes you're short on content, right? Because you want to record it all. So it's like, I'm sitting down and I was like, dude, I did this one about how this realtor really screwed us over on a deal. And it ended up with like 225,000 views on YouTube, like a million on Instagram. And I was like, let's think of something else I don't like. And Cassie's like, attorneys. You hate attorney states. And I was like, well, how did I start the other one? And I said, why I hate realtors. And I was like, well, that's simple. Well, let me explain why I hate attorneys states. It was attorney states. Okay. For closing. But on that note, I want to know, at what point in time did you decide this was the career path that you wanted to take? Was it always that you just want to be an attorney, or when did it specifically become like, hey, I want to be a part of the real estate world. I want to close probate deals. How did that come about?
There were definitely two points. So the law side definitely happened in college. So I played violin for 15 years. I was full on music. And I just realized, like, you know, that was only going to go on so long. Very few actually turn out to be the soloist, the performing, you know, people that travel the world or part of orchestras. So I just said, you know, what am I going to do where I can take my personality, take my skill set, maybe like just make some good money out there? And I was like, yeah, let me just go to law school, right? Like, what an idea that was. So my personality is like, I just jump in, right? If I like the idea and I can execute it, I go 400 miles an hour, went for it. So that was the law school path, but the real estate part really didn't happen until after law school, after the bar exam, and just getting my feet wet with the first job I took under a mentor of mine. And that's when I was like, oh wow, there's a lot with real estate, right? There's a lot with foreclosures, there's a lot with probates. At the time, it was just foreclosure defense. There was just so much still being wrapped up from 08, 09, and we were kind of on the back end of a lot of those transactions. But it was really when I was getting into those foreclosures that I saw, hey, there's probates, you know, going on here. And then a buddy of mine, he's like, hey, like, you know, this is a huge niche. You should look into it. So I'd say on both ends, like, you know, I didn't know I wanted to get into real estate early on in college or earlier than that. Like, it just really piqued my interest. And when I saw that there was just a potential with it, an unlimited really potential with it, I said, hey, what am I doing here? Why am I going to focus on all these other practice areas when I can make money, have a great time, be a part of an amazing community, and just dive into this?
You know, it's funny that you kind of share it that way, because a lot of vendors in real estate kind of start out that way, where it's like, hey, we were running, you know, marketing ads for this other industry. And then we saw, hey, everyone sucks in the real estate industry. So we started running ads for real estate investors. And now here we are, we're running a seven-figure operation. And it's hilarious to see that. When you saw the opportunity there, right? Did you think it was because it just kind of unknown, or because there was poor performance by other people, or was it just like, hey, I need something, so I'm going to take a swing at this?
I'd say probably a little bit of all the above. So at the time, there was this idea like, hold on a second. There's all these properties that are just sitting where they're titled in the name of the estate, and they're just there. Like they're not changing to other people or heirs, and they're stuck. And I thought, okay, like, you know, what's the solution here? Or what, you know, how can I jump into this? And that's where it really started to form to this model of how can I find a model to this where it's really a niche that is known, but how do you get over that hump, which is really the unknown part? And then I started to see, well, wait a second, I don't see a lot of people in that space. So, if everybody's going in one space, you know, what do you do, RJ? You go into another space where they're right. Not. Because, I mean, sure, you can go into that one space, but it's just going to be heavily competitive, right? Go into the space where people are not. And I went into that pond. And in that pond, you have just this endless list of potential, right? People that are going through situations that they don't have anywhere to go. They had nobody to talk to, nobody that was going to offer them a solution to their pain points, to their problems, to the thing that a lot of people have to do, which is pay lawyers up front to get the problem solved. And I think just all of it kind of came together because I had no idea I was going to jump into probate, no idea I was going to find a model that was going to be scalable. Right? Like you just kind of like step into it and then all of a sudden the light bulb goes off. Right. So once I found out that there's all these opportunities and then I found that I could apply the model to these opportunities, that's when it just really took off. And I'm like, wait a second, we're not just doing this in just one county. This can go all over. And let's replicate this because now we're helping people overcome these issues.
So you're specifically doing these deals only in Florida though, right?
Yeah, I'm only Florida, anywhere in Florida though, whether it's a land deal, single family, something like that, you know, 12 lots, you name it.
Which, funny enough, I'm creating something for one of our lives that we have coming up about which market should you be in. And so we're bat tracking how many deals have we done in each individual state. And I believe Florida is going to be in the top five out of all 50 states. And of course, Texas is number one because it's where we're based out of. It's where we got started. But Florida is one of the best states for wholesaling, for real estate investing. And so I think this is why this is important for people to understand. So I want to break down today's topic, how to close probate deals. And we talked about this before. There's a lot of different things that go on. But one of the things that we are big on is generating inbound leads where people come to us and say, yes, I do need to sell my property. And when that happens, one of the top lead factors or motivating factors is I inherited an unwanted property. Okay. This is what you hear that all the time. So in that scenario, for newer wholesalers, how do they handle the situation where the family is somewhat ignorant about the process, where they're like, you know, yeah, my dad just passed away. The property just got passed down to me. It's in Jacksonville, Florida. I don't know what to do. So can I sell the property? How do we then, as the wholesaler, kind of navigate that situation, especially for people that are new? They're just trying to figure out how to comp a property. They're trying to figure out the rehab budget. And now all of a sudden the seller's like, well, you're the expert. So, my dad died. So how do I sell his house? What do they do?
Yeah. So for starters, one of the first things you got to do is you got to know who you're talking to, right? A lot of times the wholesalers and investors are not talking to the right person that's going to have the authority to help move the transaction, right? So you'll find out that somebody died on title, maybe John Smith, and then you're asking, well, like, how are you related to this person? And that's a great question, right? Like, once you know the answer, if they say, oh, I'm the cousin, I'm the nephew, the first thing you got to do is go, whoa, 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 we got to back up. Because like, how did we get from the person that owned it all the way to cousin? There's so many other people in the line that start first. So And you really have to ask these questions because some of the sellers will just gloss right over it, trying to maybe pull a fast one, or maybe they just don't know any better, but I've seen too much. So really the first thing you want to do is very, very simply, you want to ask, okay, where's the spouse, right? Where's the spouse? Is there any spouse still alive or even died after? Was there a will? Does anybody know of a will that's in the file? Maybe it sometimes gets recorded in the county, deposited. Sometimes it doesn't, but sometimes usually someone has it, right? And if there's no spouse, no will, how many children ever, right? You know, and RJ, I've had to learn over the years how to be very articulate with the words I use. Like with the will, I'll even say, where's the original ink will? They'll go, oh yeah, no, I sent it to you. I was like, no. That was a PDF copy. That's not the same as like who physically is touching the actual. So, right. So you have to like really hammer down and fine tune these questions. And when you really start finding out, oh wait, there's five kids ever, right? You know, that's when you're going to go, where is everybody, right? Because you're going to need everybody. You're going to need to lock up everybody under contract. So, you know, and then you'll get the line of, well, they want nothing to do with it. They don't, I've talked to them before. Look, you got to just, you hear it. And then where is everybody? You're going to need them. And I think where a lot of investors and wholesalers kind of trip up is when they get the contract, RJ, they only get one out of the five.
Yeah.
And what they don't realize is there's repercussions to that, because if you don't get all of them and you go to closing, the title insurance is going to say, hey, we need the other four. And if the other four don't sign, guess what's happening? You're not closing, because they're all going to need to sign deeds, and they can say, no, I didn't sign this. So you have to really hammer these questions down. And let's just keep going a little further down this line. Let's just say no spouse, no will, no kids ever, no grandchildren, right? And we go up to parents. Are any parents still alive? Were there any parents still alive at the time the person died? And they say no. We go out, brothers, sisters, half brothers, half sisters ever. You see, like there's a certain way you ask it, because if you don't say it that way, they'll like, oh, I didn't know this person counted. I have. Right. And RJ, I've had these cases with half siblings. I have one right now that, you know, at first it started out as, oh, I'm the only one. And then it spiraled into, oh, there was like four. And then they backtracked, oh, there's three. Like they don't even know the family. And I'm like, you know, all right, you know, you're all signing affidavits for sure. Right, like,
exactly.
I don't want to hear about this. But you see, right. You see this line.
I do have a couple questions, because we actually had this come up. What about adopted children?
Yeah, those would count. Are they legally adopted? So you fine tune this. How many children ever, whether biologically or legally adopted, you know? And just like how a seller will say, oh, we are not together anymore. Like the spouse is like, oh, we weren't together, you know? Separated and divorced are two different concepts.
Right.
Right. Same thing with the children and the adoption part. Oh, we took them in versus we legally adopted. Like that, there's a legal significance between the two of them. Right. And so you really have to hear, like, be a good listener, and you'll really find out more about these situations than you realize that will help you succeed on deals.
Man, you sound like me trying to teach people how to close deals. That's what I say. Yeah, to close deals, you just got to be really good at listening what their problem is. And it's the same thing here, right? All right, you got an unwanted inherited property. Well, you better listen to what's going on. So adopted kid has the exact same rights as a blood kid.
Yeah, if they're legally adopted, yes.
Legally adopted. Okay. Now, you talked about, going down the food chain, right? But I am actually in one of these cases myself. So my grandmother passed away. She had my dad and then his sister and his brother. Okay. My dad passed away in 2012. But that means I'm now replacing him as the heir because I'm his one kid. So there are still three heirs. It's my aunt, my uncle, and now me. So in this scenario, take it further. It's like, okay, there's kids. Well, are all those kids alive? No. Well, does that guy have kids? Okay. And then are all of them alive? Because if not, then, well, that percent gets broken down into his kids or her kids. It can get really messy. This is how you see those crazy deals where it's like, yeah, we needed 25 affidavit of heirships or something. It's like, well, yeah, the family tree could just kind of keep going down. And with bigger families, they get really spread out wide. So that's pretty crazy. On that note, when you are talking to a seller and they've already opened up probate, okay, so they have a probate attorney. At what point in time how do we find out that they have the right to sell the property?
Yeah, so great question. And RJ, one thing on that post-deceased, pre-deceased, just so you know, that has significance as well. And we can break that down too at a later time because a lot of people don't realize how if the person dies after, we're looking at a double probate or more probates. If they die before, you're avoiding a probate, but now you got to find those people, right? So that's a whole rabbit hole. I know it's a rabbit
hole. That's mind blowing, eh? Double probate. Oh, geez.
I know, and I love when I saw you at the West Palm Beach RIA, and you're like, man, how much can you talk about probate? It's like there's so much. Like I can't even like. I can make hundreds of videos. It's crazy. Yeah. But like you said, let's just say the probate's already open. You found the deal. You're like, oh man, Al, like there's already a lawyer there. All right. What are we looking for? Really what you're looking for are the court orders, right? So if you're in the file, you're like, all right. So they filed the initial motions, petitions, they've got some affidavits, but has the judge signed an order? So like in Florida, what you're looking for when there's homestead property is an order determining homestead of real property. If it's been signed for that property you're buying, like it actually says that address, you just got to move to closing. Get that court order to the title company. You get everybody under contract. You get everybody at closing. You're moving on. Let's just say, RJ, you find a land deal in Lehigh Acres, another hot area, by the way. You want to talk about hot area? Let's just say you find the land deal. And it's already been through probate, order summaries there. There's six kids. Done, right? Just get all the six kids done. Where it gets a little tricky, and I've seen this kind of come up for some investors, is the probate's maybe done or maybe it's ongoing and it's listing one property, but it's not the property you're buying. And then you're thinking, well, they've already are going through probate. So, you know, we're good. You know, once they declare heirs, it's been a big issue with some of these title insurance companies where even if the probate's contemplating one property or it's already over, but doesn't name that other property you're buying, they want you to go back and reopen the probate just to address that property. And a lot of investors get, you know, all in a bunch about it because it just throws everything off. Now you got to get everybody back on board. So there's some things to really consider when you find either an open probate or a probate that's already been done and some of the little traps that you don't expect to come up. With probate, always expect the unexpected. Always, you know, somebody called me the other day, RJ. They were like, hey, this looks like it's going to be a simple probate. And I was like,
Yeah.
You know, because I've just seen too much that it's never just simple. Even the ones with one heir, right? You just got to take a step back and go, all right, what are we dealing with? Can we get the right title company to help us analyze these court orders, analyze what's going on? And, There's just so much value out there with these probate deals.
Yeah, Al, you're speaking my language, man. I break it down where I say when you're talking to sellers, you got to put them in one of four buckets, and the least common bucket is the price is right, but there's no motivation. And I'm like, these are the ones where it's like, you know, you call them, they're like, I'll take $10,000. Well, what you got going? Nothing. Just I want $10,000. And so a lot of new wholesalers, they send the contract and they're like, dude, I just got this grand slam. And I'm like, no. If there's no motivation, they're not telling you what's going on in their life to sell that house for a discount. There's something there. It's going to be the most complicated deal, or it's a scam, or something is going on. You better find something out, or otherwise, this ain't going to be the home run you think it is. On that note, you also brought up the getting all of the sibling signatures. So, Al, I got this crazy idea, right? I want to do a long-form video on YouTube every single day this year. So Groundhog Day was coming up. And as a kid growing up, Groundhog Day, the movie, was one of my favorite movies. I just thought it was hilarious, right? So I was like, all right, guys, here's what we're going to do. We're going to record like 10 minutes of me doing something like in the office, like all the different stuff I do, like pulling up to the office, talking to sellers, doing all these different things. And then we're going to loop it for all 24 hours during Groundhog Day. Well, come to find out, you can't actually do that on YouTube. They limit you at like 12 hours. So we did it for 12 hours on Groundhog Day. One of those moments during the 10-minute loop was me walking out of the office, like, just signed up another contract. And Cassie's like, did you know that there's 5 heirs on that contract before we got one signature? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, that's what I have you for. You're going to call and get the other 4 signatures, but I was live. I mean, I got the one brother to sign. You'll get the other 4 because that is so true, bro. That is like real life. You have to go and you have to essentially close every single heir on that deal or it doesn't count. You know,
yeah.
Not even a deal.
Yeah. I would have loved to see the video of you tracking the other 4 down. Like,
She did it. That was real life. I closed the deal on a live with Jerry Norton, and it was a probate deal, and I got the 1. And then, dude, it took her like 4 hours to go get the – because she essentially had to close every single one and walk them through and explain what was happening. It's crazy. I do have a question, though. When we call a seller and they say, we're going through probate, I want to sell my house, and we say, okay, we could give you $200,000. And they say, okay, so you need to write up a contract, and then the judge has to approve that we could sell the house for $200,000. Why? Where did the judge come into this, and why would a judge need to approve our offer amount?
Yeah, so that kind of strategy on the judge approving, it's going to vary state by state, right? Okay. I would say, gosh, it has to be 90 to 95% of the time on these probates that I see that doesn't even come into play. Many of these are primary residences, homestead, inherently going to the true heirs, or the land deals where just, you know, plain vanilla, boom, down to the heirs, where everybody's just locking it up under contract, and all the probate is just doing is taking the title out of the person that died to the heirs, and that's it.
Do you think it's because essentially the estate was upside down, and so there's like the amount of debt that was there, the judge is having to approve to make sure like at least as much of the debt possibly can get paid back? Do you think that could be what it is?
I'm not sure it may be. I don't know where that would actually be or take place, but I can tell you that there's a few scenarios where the contract does have to get approved. So for example, there was one case recently where the guy lived out of state, but he owned this little vacation house here in Florida. And it was a pretty sizable vacation house. I mean, great area, great location. The scenario was all screwed up with wills and trusts, but you know, I got around it and we broke it down. I said, hey, it's just going to be the two of you, leave it alone. But the issue is that it was still in that creditor, period. And because it wasn't a primary residence and because you're still within that statute of limitations, like you haven't reached that point yet, that's when it becomes this like open-ended asset where creditors could try to make claims and stuff. And in that period, it forms something different where because of that asset, now you have to get that motion to approve sale. Like there's a different formality behind that. That's different, right? Like if we can avoid those situations, it's way better. Or another one, RJ, is like, let's say in that same deal and you wanted to buy it, same kind of scenario, wasn't the primary, and there's three kids, one's missing, you got the other two, right? And this is probably going to go down an interesting hole for you. You know, in that scenario, if you wanted to come in and buy it at $200,000, you know, and if you have this the documents to substantiate the price, the value, the rehab, the repairs, and everything, it's obviously not going to be ARV. I mean, right. None of these inherit, like very few of these inheritance properties are true, like ready to buy right now. At that stage, you're going to need to get that contract approved, right? You're going to need the judge to review the fairness behind it. You know, does it substantiate? But those are different scenarios. I'm like, again, 90% of the time, we're not even talking about getting anybody else involved. We're just focused on, hey, do we have everybody? Do we have the documents? Can we get it filed? Can we get the court order? Because who we really are up against is the title insurance. It always comes down to the title insurance. Are we satisfying what they want? That's the key.
Okay, I got a question. I got two questions based off of that response. I'm going to start with the most recent thing you just touched base on. Is title insurance just a big fraud?
I don't say it's a fraud. I think that it's necessary to help protect situations that may come up that people just didn't foresee. I think there's value to having title insurance. There's value to a title insurance company giving you a premium so that it protects you later on. I think that there's a lot of benefits to it. Does it get in the way of a lot of transactions? Sure, but it's really to help protect. And it's a very belt and suspenders process, RJ. Like, they want it to be something that people can really make sure, hey, we're not messing around. You know, we got everybody. There's no issues at all. But I'd say this. There's one thing to know about title insurance, and that is – you're not closing the deal without satisfying them. And that's why I say get with somebody that's super, super – get with great title companies. And I'm sure you know, you can probably go on a rant about that. But get with title companies that are going to really help go above and beyond to help you on those deals.
I mean, I guess where I'm coming from in that regard, Steve Tring was the first person that ever said that. He said it on a PTD. And then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, this guy actually owns a title company. So it's weird to hear an owner of a title company saying, hey, this is kind of a big scam. With the technology that we have available to us today, you would think we would have a better way of doing real estate transactions where there wouldn't have to be this quote-unquote protection on something that's not known. It's like, dude, you should just know. I mean – literally, if my cell phone can know what I want to buy and not buy, and that's what ads show up, pretty sure we can start figuring out what happened on a property, what liens, judgments, everything like that. My next question is, you brought up the creditor period, okay? So let's talk about that, what that is, and then I'll break down my side of how going through that and mind-blowing it was that this is how we still do this in 2024. So what is the creditor period?
Really, the creditor period is, so within 2 years from the date of death of that person, creditors can make claims to the property, right? And when we're talking about creditors, we're talking about like credit cards, hospital bills, Home Depot, Best Buy, all these different claims, right? And for the most part, a lot of these claims can't attach to the homestead primary residence, right? So if all we're dealing with and only asset that you're trying to buy, RJ, is the primary, a lot of these credit cards and hospitals, they can try to make the claim, they can file the claim, but it doesn't mean it's going to hold up. And very few hold up. What holds up? Mortgages, right? Taxes, IRS. the security liens, things that are attaching a pool lien, a roofing lien, there's certain things inherently attached to that property, that's sticking. I mean, you're not getting rid of a mortgage through a probate, right? Right. Let's not get excited with that. Right? But all these other things that come in, if it's just homestead, all right, you know, see, you just deal with what comes in, but really they don't have the claims. Now it's when you don't just have the house, but then you have the bank account for $70,000, right? And now Best Buy is filing their claim for 15 grand because dad bought the Sony $5,000 70-inch TV, and right. You know, he said, you know, screw it before I go, let's just do this. Well, you know, now they have a potential shot at trying to recover some of that money, right? Yeah. And I say potential using my lawyer words, just because, you know, let's see the basis for that, right? But the big picture is there's a certain time period within which these creditors can try to make a claim. Now in Florida, after 2 years, they're out. Mortgage still sticks, IRS still sticks for whatever that time period is. You got to look at it on the recorded document. The security liens aren't going away unless they're satisfied. But all these other things, they're out. So a lot of times, a lot of these inherited properties, people have been sitting on these for 3+ years. So any, you know, this comes up with wholesalers and investors. They'll find a deal and the person died in 2017 and they're ready to sell. They can get everybody on board. But the one sticking point is, we don't want to have any debt. We are not worried about the creditors. We don't want to. And it's like, it's crazy. Cause like, for me, that's an easy answer. It's like 2017, we're locked and loaded. Let's go. Like, what are you worried about? Right. So just knowing that the focus really don't focus too much on that. You know, yes, I'm sure that could be a concern for the seller, right? Like that could be the ultimate concern, but that's where you just say, hey, look, let's gather all that stuff. Let's talk with the attorney. Let's figure out what the repercussions are. And hey, if there's nothing there, great. Let's move forward.
So I'm the administrator of my grandmother's estate. Okay. We go to court. I get nominated the administrator. They sign off on it. And my probate attorney comes to me with this packet and says, okay, these are all the things that you have to do. And she gets to the creditor period. And she's like, all right, so what we're going to do is we're going to run an ad in the classifieds to let all of the creditors know that your grandmother passed away. And I'm like, really? They're still the classifieds?
Yeah.
And she's like, yep. And I'm like, that's like, this is how it's done? She's like, yep. So sure enough, she runs this ad in the classifieds and Walmart showed up. Capital One showed up, Citibank, Chase, they all came out of the woodworks. My favorite was Capital One. Apparently there was a credit card that had $8,000 debt on it. So they come to me and, you know, send me the letter. So I call Capital One. I sit on the phone with Capital One for 2.5 hours, basically proving that I'm the person that they need to talk to for them to say, we're going to forgive this $8,000 in debt. And I'm like, so you sent me all of this to say I owe you $8,000 and I get on the phone. They're like, just kidding. We'll just wipe it out now. So yeah, dude, it's crazy how we still have just antiquated processes with this where it's like literally we're running ads in the classifieds on the newspaper. This is insane. There's got to be a better way for us to do this. But apparently there's not.
And RJ, I'll tell you this, with the rise of AI, these companies are getting smarter than newspaper, right? So same thing here. If we need to run an ad, if we have to do the newspaper creditor period, yeah, they still do the throw it in the newspaper. And, you know, of course, now the newspaper is like online now too. So like, right. You know, they'll be able to search it. But I think the AI, these AI systems are getting smarter because as soon as probate gets filed, I saw a case around Christmas time where we filed the case and literally 3 days later, a creditor filed the claim. And I'm like, the case just got assigned. I mean, like, how did they know? And I'm like, oh, here we go. So you start seeing this and my brain starts going, how do we like beat the system?
Actually, it wasn't AI. What it was is they're an REI SIFT user and they watched Tyler Austin's First to Market strategy. And so as soon as the probate case was filed, they pulled the documents and immediately were like, boom, because that's what he teaches, bro. Tyler Austin has it where it's like, how do you get first to call the probates, first to call the evictions? It's as soon as that paperwork is filed, it has the phone number of the seller. Yeah. And it's like, you're the first person to call. He blew my mind when he showed me that. All right, so transitioning away from probate. I appreciate you talking about that, man, because it's not talked enough about. And some of these cases are crazy. Long story short, you need to have someone that's an advocate for you on your side. So if you're in Florida and you got a probate deal, close through Al. I mean, that's the best way to do it right there. And if you're not in Florida, you need to find somebody, a good title company or a good attorney to help you out with these. One of the things I want to talk to you about is I just started my health and fitness journey. I did a video called Win the Day. About not only winning the day in business, but also in your health and fitness. When I met you, man, you were probably at the worst with your health and fitness. And then you literally started right after that, or you had just started when I met you. And then the next time I saw you, you were like half the size. So you're an inspiration for me. Talk to me about what that has done for you on a professional side of things, not only just how you feel and how you look, but also just on a professional level, what that's done for you.
Yeah, I appreciate it, RJ. And by the way, I have that photo still. We actually took it with Robert Rodriguez. I don't know if I've ever sent it to you. I got to DM it to you after.
Yeah, please.
But I still have it. I was like, oh my gosh, crazy. What a journey that was for me. And I got to say, a lot of the root of where it started from was I was starting to really pick up more deals. I was starting to do more business. I was starting to speak more at more places. And I just think my body wasn't keeping up. And I just started to feel like just dragged down and I knew I wanted to perform at a high level and have more energy. And I was just like, well, if my business starts outpacing me, what am I going to do? I need to start outpacing my business so that I can get more and more and take on more. So really that journey just took a whole road with that. A lot of people just talk about discipline. For me, it's a massive discipline. Every day having that routine, really fine tuning what that is and making sure I'm the most efficient and productive every day. That is what really helped. But how it's truly helped my professional side, my business side, I would say that even on the mental acuity and being sharp every day and being just ready and having that energy has dramatically changed. My energy level is way higher now than it ever was 2 years ago. My ability for articulation, for being able to feel confident on anything has just gone through the roof. And I'd say that, to anybody that's doing a journey or going on a journey, a lot of people look at a health journey as a physical aspect. Right. Got to drop the pounds, got to fit in clothes. What a lot of our entrepreneurs in real estate aren't focused on is how there's a real mental aspect to it that they're not realizing. Like the mental benefits, if you can really tap into, I want to have better mental benefits, that is the ultimate achievement. And that's not going to happen right away. And RJ, this was a crazy point for me. When I first started doing it, it was all about the weight and getting it off. And I knew that, I wanted to perform better or get the energy. I would say it wasn't until like a year and a half later when I really started to see that the mental side of it caught up with the physical. And I felt like a completely just different person. My wants, my desires changed. You'll love this. For me, there was a point when I dropped the weight that I was like, oh yeah, let me just go out, go out with people. I haven't felt like this in years. I'm back to like college level. But then when I was out one night, I was like, what am I doing? Like, what right. is this? Like, you know, am I bettering myself professionally and personally? And I think that's when the mental side really kicked in. And I really made a switch, even I would say about 6 months ago. And I said, if I'm not doing an activity that's benefiting me both professionally and personally, I'm not doing it. And if I'm just out to be out, like, that doesn't make sense. I want to make money. I want to build relationships. I want to be on a podcast with RJ. I want to interview RJ. I want to bring on guests. I want to do content and make my team better and build a law firm. Like, there was just so much that came from doing that journey that wasn't just the pounds. It was a renewed sense of wants and vision. That was just so inspiring for me. And even to this day, I think about it. Like, I wake up early, I get going to the gym. And I come back and I'm ready to go. My assistants are probably like, what in the world's going on over there with him? Cause, you know, I'm like the Energizer Bunny all day long. It's crazy, RJ. It is.
And I'll touch base on another side of the mental aspect. You know, I put a lot of content that's out there, and some of it is, you know, funny. You know, we talked about that. I hate attorneys. I hate realtors. And then I also have, like, some of my crazy calls, specifically back from 2020 when we were doing texting. And I posted one the other day. It's a four-year-old video, okay? It's a 50-second clip where a guy calls me and he says, there's no Connie here. If you were here, I'd break your GD jaw. Quit effing calling me. And, you know, he's cussing me out. And I called him back and I left him a funny voicemail. Well, it hit the algorithm yesterday. And so it started just, you know, going. And now it's, you know, real estate investors aren't seeing it anymore. Now just the regular Joe Blow is seeing it. So the comments start going negative. And, dude, I got, you know, I love how this, at one point in time in the video, I called myself big. Because the guy said he'd break my jaw. And I'm like, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a pretty big guy. I don't know if you can break my jaw. And I got a big beard. You might even miss. And so one person commented, I love how morbidly obese people call themselves big. Another comment about who is this fat guy or this fat guy thinks he can fight just because he's fat. You know, it's just all of these negative comments about my size, my weight. You know, apparently I have a neck beard. By the way, all this hair grows from the chin. Okay. It's not growing from my neck. There is skin under there. Okay. And it was funny because, you know, just these negative comments about who I am, the way I look physically. And that doesn't necessarily bother me because I have chosen to put myself out there. I know it's coming. But to other people, bro, that could be like life-changing for them. And to think that I know I'm not the only person getting those types of comments. So from a mental aspect, it's not only about how you feel and stuff like that, but it's also about, yeah, we live in a society that openly talks about mental health, but dude, there are still people out there that don't give a shit. And it's mainly just people, random people on the internet that will say whatever they want to say about the way that you look, your size, your weight, the way your beard looks, whatever, that mental side of things, can take a huge toll on people. I mean, dude, I posted a reel the other day of Cassie and immediately there was probably 6 or 7 negative comments about her teeth. And it was just like, I literally had to delete the thing because it made me so mad. It didn't bother her, but it made me so mad where I'm like, dude, we live in a society where literally that can just cripple you. So there's that side of things as well to just eliminate anything like that can mentally handicap you. Because, dude, as business owners, the most important thing that we can do is make sure that we are showing up and we are at full optimization while we are here for our business and for our teams. And if you're not, then your business is going to suffer because of it. So thank you for being an inspiration for me, man. I know. How long ago was that? Was that three and a half years ago?
Yes, started May of 22.
Yeah. So, wow, dude. So you were quick. We're just now getting to 2 years.
Yeah, man. Yeah. There you go, baby.
Now I'm inspired. I can get there. It's already working. I'm excited for the journey. And we get to hang out here in a couple of weeks. So
yeah,
about it, man. For those that are wanting to work with you or follow you, what's the best ways they can find out more about you?
Yeah. RJ, best ways is definitely social media. Find me on Instagram, Facebook, and you know, a lot of people, DM me through those, mediums, cause that's also the easiest way too. So find me on the social channels, find my YouTube channel under Alan Nicoletti. Of course you can go to the website, www.alannicoletti.com. You'll find my email and stuff there. And also RJ, for your listeners, if they're doing these deals in Florida, especially, I have a probate checklist, so a freebie I can give to the listeners and viewers. So if you email me and you've heard RJ's show, email me. I'll send you the probate checklist and you'll love it, RJ, because that checklist, I'll even send it to you. That checklist has just the simple items that when you go to an air seller meeting, you're like, hey, well, wait, we're ready for this. Wait, do you have this? Do you have this? And you just look like a rock star when you do it, right? So happy to share that with everybody. Has all my info there.
Love it, man. Well, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for stopping by on the show. Guys, if you enjoyed this show, because obviously we're way better than Real Estate Disruptors and Steve Trang, make sure you leave us a 5-star review. By the way, if you haven't caught our interview on Al's show, me and Cassie did a podcast with Al, and also we had a special, it was the season finale of last season of the Al Nicoletti show, Pardon the Disruption. Me, Steve, and Chris Jefferson were on there. It was awesome. We're gonna have to do that again sometime, man. That was a lot, man.
Let's do it, because that was a banger. I mean, I think we had 100 people watching at one time. I was like, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was awesome. So check out the Al Nicoletti show. He's got tons of great interviews. And like I said, we've been on there a couple times. So, all right, guys, appreciate you. Make sure you like this video and subscribe, and we'll see you guys next week.